Good afternoon, everybody. I apologize that I don't have an excellent PowerPoint presentation. I'm trying to find my one page of notes. There they are. That's as good as it gets. I don't think anyone wants to Xerox these for distribution because I can barely read them. I think somebody said a little while ago that the way to do a good speech to an audience like this is to be pithy and pungent. I'd like to try to be pithy, but I wasn't quite sure whether pungent had a sort of on-the-nose quality to it or not. I will try not to be on the nose. I wanted to make a small number of observations about events we might all look to in the coming weeks and months to discern what kind of a president Barack Obama is going to be where the economy is concerned. The backdrop to that, I think, is there are so many cliches these days about how historic the election of Barack Obama was and what a mess the poor guy has inherited. But I do think the saddest one would be something like envisaging what it was like for Barack Obama on Tuesday night in the U.S., when presumably after his speech to 150,000 people, he went and had some quiet celebratory champagne with his wife and friends and other people. And I hope he had a few bottles, because he woke up the next day to find out that Wall Street was down 5% on the first day, followed by another 5% on the second day, followed by 500,000 in lost jobs on the third day. In 2 months, I believe that was. So it's a tough thing being a Barack Obama, but of course he comes to power with what in my estimation is literally in my adult lifetime unprecedented political capital both at home and abroad. If you go and look at the U.S. election results, you'll see that the Obama coalition is broader than any coalition in American politics since Ronald Reagan was elected in 1980. And, of course, I think the question on a lot of people's minds in the U.S., around the world, and probably in this room, is whether Barack Obama is going to reverse all the things that Ronald Reagan did to the American economy in the 1980s, in particular tax cuts for business and high-income earners and a profound deregulation of the American economy. I think the reason that that question should be asked is the reason that Barack Obama was elected. For all his rock star celebrity and soaring oratory, Obama won the 2008 election in the U.S. the old-fashioned way. It was a referendum on the economic policies of George W. Bush. John McCain couldn't get out of the way, and Barack Obama had a landslide. That's what happened. The question, I think, going forward is what kind of a Democratic president will Barack Obama be? And there are really two possibilities, it seems to me, two stylized possibilities. The first one is that it's Obama's Democratic Party on day one, and his technocratic, centrist, multilateral instincts take over. Alternative two is that Obama is a captive of the Democratic Party and all of its insularity, protectionism, desire to get even for the American middle class with 8 years of Bush administration and 25 years in Democrats' views of assaults on the middle class have to be wiped out in one term. I don't think we know the answer yet to the question of whether it's going to be a centrist, globalist Obama leading the U.S. forward, or whether the worst instincts of the Democratic Party will win out. But I do think there are some early test cases that we should all look to. So let me mention four test cases. First, the G20 summit how many days is it now? The 15th of November. It's not very many days from today. Kevin Rudd and all the other G20 leaders, following the finance minister's meeting over the weekend, will descend on Washington. George W. Bush is the host, but everyone wants to know what Barack Obama thinks. It seems pretty clear at the moment that this is a bullet that Obama is going to dodge. He's been very clear about saying the US can only have one president at a time, and I am not it. However, what I think is going on below the surface there is two things. The first one is that the US is in no position to be told what to do about the global financial system by President Sarkozy, the EU, and the Chinese. It seems to me that this notion that we're going to have a Bretton Woods II with a global convergence among the US, Europe, and China over regulation of the global financial system is a bit of a pipe dream. I would imagine that there will be some lofty principles enunciated at the G20 this week, but I would, if you were asking me as a predictive matter, I wouldn't expect there to be much beyond lofty principles over the next 6 or 9 months at a multilateral level. What one would expect going forward is that the US and Barack Obama will have to decide how much more regulation of the financial system in the US America requires. And there are two schools of thought on that, as I'm sure you all know. The first school of thought says that the US actually has a decent financial regulatory regime in place, but that a combination of lax enforcement plus lax monetary policy in the US led to the problems that we've all experienced, and therefore you don't need to do much. You just need to have a more sensible policy in the Fed and better enforcement of existing regulations, and that's the way going forward. The alternative view says, no, 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 Wall Street has run amok, and it's time to have a pretty serious re-regulation of Wall Street. Where would Obama stand on that? Well, you could take cues from the kind of people that he's talking about as Treasury Secretary and who his economic advisors are. And most of those people are likely to be quite much more friendly to Wall Street than you would expect. And I also, if I was predicting, and I wouldn't even risk my own money on my own predictions, let alone suggest to you that you do, so you can take my predictions for what they're worth. My prediction would be that Obama actually won't allow a lot of sort of retaliatory re-regulation of the financial system in the US. And the reason I would bet that way is that Obama was pretty smart during the Wall Street carnage and the $700 billion bailout period. He just took one giant step back and said, "This is not my problem. You guys can deal with this. I want to do what's right for the country," and that's what he did. And I think it worked extremely well as an electoral matter. And I would expect that he will say, listen, the worst of the pure financial crisis is over. It's time for me to deal with the real economy. How's he going to deal with the real economy? Well, what he said about the real economy is it's time for a middle-class rescue package. We've had a Wall Street rescue. It's now time to rescue the middle class. And I presume to economists that's a pretty scary thought. So what's going to be a leading indicator of what a rescue to the American middle class looks like? A leading indicator might be what President-elect Obama says about whether or not to give a $25 billion plus cash infusion to General Motors sometime soon. GM has said it's going broke. No surprises there, because GM wanted to sell Hummers to the world when the world, including Americans, were demanding Prius. Now Detroit says, we are so important to the U.S. that you, Democratic administration, must help us transition from Hummer to Prius. And Obama said over the weekend that he's listening to that. Of course, that adds a second interesting ingredient to the equation, which is that Obama is not going to call that industrial policy or a bailout for GM. He's going to call that green tech. I want to invest, says Barack Obama, $150 billion over 10 years in alternative energy, and my first big investment is going to be helping Detroit go green. I think he'll probably do that. The question will be whether autos is an isolated example or the beginning of a big trend in an Obama administration to bail out the old American economy, which is obviously far more important in the U.S. politically than it is economically. What's the latest time I looked at the statistics on this? You know, manufacturing employment in the U.S. is about 13% of American employment. If you listen to the political debate, you'd think it was 87%. And just watch how the Democrats play with that. Now, of course, I think that the smart thing to do with General Motors would be to let the Chinese buy it. For two reasons. One, China's sitting with all this cash and they're looking for fixed asset investments in the US at low prices where the capital injections presumably would be great for the American firms. Second, GM doesn't make any money in the US. They make their money offshore. Last time I checked, they were the largest single automobile seller in China. This is a win-win economically, but politically, of course, it's a non-starter, but I just wanted to flag it for the following reason. Chinese investment in the U.S. is going to become, I would predict, an enormously important political issue sooner rather than later, and the question is whether Barack Obama will say that it's a good idea to have Chinese investment in the U.S. or not. Obama's China credentials are a bit, I think it's fair to say, he did some significant China bashing in the primary campaign. The left of the Democratic Party, led by Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, is still very concerned about China and human rights violations. But if I was predicting what he will do there, I would just take the trend line through Democratic presidents, which is that Democratic presidents become much more free trade and pro the global economy than their parties when they're in office. That's historically the case. I think it'll be harder for Obama than it might have been for some other presidents, certainly much harder than when Bill Clinton did this in the early 1990s, because the U.S. economy is in much worse shape, and because China today is a reality, it was just an aspiration in the early 1990s. But nonetheless, I think that Obama will try to go to the center on China in a way that is the sensible center, which is surely in everybody's interests, but don't expect him to support a Chinese purchase of GM. Instead, expect this bailout to take place in the guise of green tech. Okay, let me just, a third event to look at is the South Korea-U.S. free trade deal. I think this is likely to be a bellwether of where U.S. trade policy goes in the new administration. Obama has, let's review the state of play on this. At least in American terms, the bilateral free trade deal with South Korea is the most important trade deal in America since the infamous NAFTA in 1992, on which Clinton was partially elected, and then saw to completion in 1993-4 after he was in fact elected. The South Korean free trade deal was negotiated by the Bush administration, but it must go through Congress. And presumably now, with a new president, the president gets to opine on it as well. Obama has said that this deal needs to be renegotiated for the blanket reason that the Democratic left has used in the U.S. to oppose free trade deals for ages, which is they don't take labor and environmental standards seriously enough. But in the case of South Korea, there's an additional two problems there. The first problem is beef. The second problem is autos. where the US says that we don't get access to your markets. Why should we give you access to our markets? I would expect that the South Korea-US free trade deal does not become a reality in an Obama administration, and I think that that's a really bad thing. However, actually, let me do one extension and then a however. The extension would be, I think it's probably a bit unrealistic to expect an Obama administration to be a leader on many or any free trade, new free trade deals, including at the global level, even though I would imagine that Obama in his heart of hearts would love to complete the Doha round. I don't see how that's going to be possible politically for him. There's just not enough in it for the US, and there are too many costs in farm states. So no new free trade deals. But I think going the other extreme is just being a bit apocalyptic as well. The idea that NAFTA or the US-Australia Free Trade Area or any of these other things would be unwound by an Obama administration, I think, is just not in the cards. So on trade, my expectation would be very hard for Obama to play a Bill Clinton-like pro-free trade, pro-globalization, pro-APEC, China into WTO, all the things that Clinton did. I don't see that one should expect them from Obama, but by the same token, I think it's unrealistic that the doom and gloom scenario that has a lot of free trade deals being undone, I don't think is realistic. Last point, climate change. There was a remarkable thing in Barack Obama's victory speech that you would have had to be paying very close attention to hear, because I think it was only three or four words. But he said, when he was doing a list of the challenges that face the United States, the two obvious things, digging out of the economic crisis and figuring out what to do with Islamic extremism, where the Islamic extremism agenda is increased, not decreased, adding Pakistan and Iran to Afghanistan and Iraq. So he had those two. He inserted right in the middle a planet in peril. Those were the four words. So those were the three greatest challenges facing the US in Barack Obama's estimation, and one of them was climate change. If you were Kevin Rudd or somebody in Australia who cares about climate change, I presume those were remarkably good words to hear, but I would just caution that the logical way forward for Barack Obama and the Democrats on climate change is through these investments in alternative energy, green collar jobs, green tech, all this stuff that's being talked about, rather than American championing of a global emissions trading scheme, a supersizing of the Rudd agenda in the run-up to the Copenhagen summit at the end of 2009. In the US, and I can say this just having spent the last 6 months in Australia and a lot of time in the US living in the greenest part of the US, the People's Republic of Santa Monica in California, for those of you who've been there, in the US, it's just not climate change that moves the political needle. It's energy independence that moves the political needle. And if you're Obama, the really smart way to do energy independence today is to invest in alternative energy and say it's going to create new green-collar jobs that are going to grow us out of an old Detroit model and into a 21st century leadership position on innovation. That makes perfect political sense. Saying you're going to put any brakes on the US economy by voluntarily agreeing to a emissions trading scheme absent a serious commitment of China and probably India to be in that deal as well just doesn't look like it makes much political sense. So I think it's possible for Barack Obama to say that a planet in peril is one of his highest priorities, but don't expect that that will mean a global emissions trading scheme declared by President Obama for the world at the end of 2009. I'm going to stop right there.